Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia, they're Mitchell.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, hello. We are right in the middle of the holiday season in the U.S. At least we've got some Thanksgiving food in us, getting geared up for Christmas, and it's this weird little spot for movies between the two holidays where the awards players are out there, some blockbustery things, Avatar on the horizon. People don't want to maybe throw out their hugest movies right before Avatar is about to come out. But we've got an eclectic little mix of like wintry movies going right now. We'll be talking about Killer Santa and Violent Night, double Tilda Swinton's in The Eternal Daughter, and the return of Oscar winner Will Smith with Emancipation. Then we'll look back to see what everyone thought of last week's releases, your community reviews tagged weekend watch list, and of course, our own shuffled watch list, which you and I watched some of the bleakest movies that have ever existed.
Ooh, yes, yes, we did, Mitchell. And let's start off with a movie that may not be as bleak as the title implies. Dashing Through the Blood, Santa's Coming to Slay, Violent Night. Directed by Tommy Wirkola on 14,000 watch list. This is coming out wide in theaters. When a team of mercenaries breaks into a wealthy family compound on Christmas Eve, taking everyone inside hostage, the team isn't prepared for a surprise combatant. Santa Claus is on the grounds, and he's about to show why this Nick is no saint.
That's a very playful synopsis. I think probably fits the tone of what people can expect for this movie. David Harbour is playing Santa Claus. He's getting into that, like, the Stranger Things vibe where he's, like, mixing the, like, comedy. He's bringing a little bit of, like, sass with all of his performances that he's doing lately. And I think Tommy Wirkola, people who don't know him, he directed Dead Snow, which was another, like, winter horror movie with zombie Nazis that came out, like, 10 years ago that I really dug. It's, like, a very, like, dark kind of comedy, very bloody, very gory. I'm expecting maybe Violent Night to be similar to it. How do you feel? What's, like, what are your vibes generally on, like, Christmas horror?
Christmas horror is kind of fascinating because you're taking this wholesome, nice holiday and really tearing it up. So I think it's an interesting genre. I've never, actually, I don't need to say that I have never been much of a Christmas person. That's very Scroogey of me to say.
That's fine.
So,
that's fine.
Okay, can I admit that? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I lean Halloween rather than Christmas is what I'll say. But I think that the most interesting thing about this is the sexification of Santa. David Harbour is really, he really taps into like the lumberjack thing that some people are into. That's not my community, but I totally respect it. As somebody from Portland, I have to respect the lumberjack aesthetic. And I mean, if we take a look at this poster, we got to talk about the poster really quick.
Oh,
like Santa's
God,
legs are spread, holding like a phallic hammer thing.
Yeah.
Like
large sledgehammer on this man.
Yes, yes. Like they're really, really leaning into that, which I think is interesting. There's also been this Killer Santa trend lately, I feel like there's another film coming out called Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Yeah, I feel like it's a fun thing with like Killer Santas. There was this movie called P2 that came out in like 2007 that Alexander Aja wrote. I don't think he directed it, but Wes Bentley plays like a mall Santa Claus who like terrorizes a girl in like a parking garage. It's a lot of fun. That's a weird one. Wes Bentley as Santa is
Wes
like really
Bentley as Santa is something I have never expected.
It's a hoot. And like, I've really just recently watched the movie The Silent Partner from the 70s with Elliot Gould, and Christopher Plummer plays like a murderous Santa Claus in that. It's a thing. It's a thing. People are just like scared of Santas or something.
Somebody needs to make a Letterboxd list of all the Killer Santa movies. I'm sure this already exists. I'm sure it does.
It's got to be out there somewhere.
It's got to be out there.
Speaking of David Harbour thirsting, though, the reviews on Letterboxd are already popping off with a lot of that. Served Then Died wrote a review on Letterboxd that just says, "Suddenly I'm a ho, ho, ho," which I assume it's got to be David Harbour related.
And Leah says, "Wouldn't mind sitting on his lap, dot, dot, dot." So the marketing is working. It is working.
It's working. They're getting the Harbor Heads in for that one. Yeah. If you want your holiday family horror in the more art house esoteric variety, our indie queens, Joanna Hogg and Tilda Swinton, are back again with The Eternal Daughter, directed by Hogg. It's on 20,000 watch lists, distributing this weekend in limited theaters and on VOD from A24. The synopsis for this one: an artist and her elderly mother confront long-buried secrets when they return to a former family home, now a hotel haunted by its mysterious past. Mia, you and I have both seen The Eternal Daughter. What did you think about this one?
I got to see this at AFI Fest, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's such a mature and poignant ghost story that's definitely, it's so much more moving than scary. So if you hear ghost story and you're like, don't worry. You may cry, but you won't scream. And Mitchell, we had kind of a similar experience watching this. Would you like to share?
Yeah, so this movie is, Tilda is playing, so she's playing two characters. She's playing both the daughter and the mother in this. And it is sort of a continuation of Joanna Hogg's The Souvenir movies. And she is playing the older versions of both her character and her daughter, Honor Swinton Burns' character in those movies, Julie. So Tilda is playing the aged up versions of both of those characters. And neither of us knew that going into it. I'm not sure like how much they're publicizing that element of the movie. It's not a spoiler for if anybody's worried that we are spoiling the movie. It is like she mentions her name in the first like 10 minutes of the movie. It's like talked about open. Hogg is like talking about it openly, but it is like not really in the like marketing from what I was seeing. It's obviously not in the synopsis. So I had no idea. And when, as a big fan of the Souvenir movies, especially the second one, when the younger Tilda says her name, Julie Hart, in the first like 10 minutes of the movie, I literally gasped out loud and was like, wait, like I had to like stop and like check Wikipedia, like check to see like, she's actually playing the same character, right? And yeah, I mean, how was that for you? Especially seeing it at AFI Fest in this big theater, like surrounded by people. What was that moment like for you?
Oh, it was such a pleasant surprise to find out it was part of the Souvenir cinematic universe. I also want to stress that if you haven't seen the two previous Souvenirs, that's okay. You will not be lost, but it does add a little bit of, you know, that emotional layer because it's interesting to see this character grow up so much. You know, like we start with her when she's in college and now she's grown into Tilda Swinton. It's wow.
David Sims wrote a review that I agree with. David said, I need to go to a haunted estate where a northern lass will be rude to me immediately. There is the concept, or like the receptionist at this hotel is like the nastiest like piece of work ever. And she is, the actress's name, Carly Sophia Davies, who plays the receptionist. When I finished the movie, I looked her up to see what else she's been in. This is her first movie. She hasn't been in anything else. And she is so good, so funny, and just rude as hell. Like the most fun hotel receptionist to watch, but the worst if you were actually at this hotel to like be around would be an absolute nightmare.
Oh yeah. I love there's like just like this brief scene where she's like on Instagram on the computer and then she sees Tilda Swinton like minimizes it, which is just so true about jobs like that. It was so funny. Yeah, this movie has some laughs too. It's not all just sad ghost stuff. There's a Fran actually wrote in her review, crazy to see her doing old Hogg, people having a bad time on vacation, with new Hogg, Julie Hart, cinematic universe, simultaneously. Lots to mull on here. Had no clue what to expect. No complaints, though. There's a crash zoom on a dog. Smiley face.
Yeah. The dog, definitely a reason to see this movie alone is checking out the dog. A gorgeous dog.
Well, let's move on to a movie that, well, I don't know if there's going to be a dog in this one. Mitchell, do you think there will be a dog in the film Emancipation?
Probably not, but nobody's seen it yet. So maybe we're not seeing dog mentions in the reviews yet.
Okay. Emancipation, directed by Antoine Fuqua. It is on 3,500 watch lists. It's coming out in limited theaters, followed by an Apple TV Plus release on December 9th. It is inspired by the gripping true story of a man who would do anything for his family and for freedom. When Peter, an enslaved man, risks his life to escape and return to his family, he embarks on a perilous journey of love and endurance. So we're burying the lead that Will Smith is the star of Emancipation.
I'll get on like my soapbox for a second because I've been seeing Smith has been starting to do like the press rounds for the movie. And of course, people just keep bringing up the slap from the Oscars and everything. Like, it's expected. It's obviously what's going to get brought up. And I'll just say briefly, I think it's absurd that this even needs to be like part of the conversation with this movie, like especially. Like, I get that it was a huge moment. Like, we were all, you know, jaw dropped when it happened. But the fact that, like, he has to be out there saying, like, I understand if people don't forgive me for it and won't watch the movie because of it and everything. When, like, 2 years ago, the Oscars were about to, like, almost gave Glenn Close a win for a movie that basically helped fuel, like, a right-wing nut job into getting into office in the U.S. And just this year, a movie came out by, like, an admitted, you know, sex offender with the movie starring, like, half of Hollywood in it and barely, like, he doesn't have to, you know, do a press tour where he's apologizing for anything or whatever. I just think it's a shame that a movie, especially a movie like this, which is obviously like about a really important story and he's putting a lot of himself into, has to be doing a press round that's like majority about this. And I feel like I haven't even, Emancipation, I haven't seen a lot of press for it. Like, I haven't seen a lot of marketing for it. And maybe that has something to do with the Apple TV Plus kind of strategy. But it feels like a movie that if it had come out 5 years ago would be getting a lot more like attention and like awards kind of buzz and whatever. And maybe because of the shroud of the slap stuff and everything isn't. And that's a shame. I'm excited to see it. I like Antoine Fuqua a lot. He's a director who goes into like genre territory more often than not. People know him from like Training Day and The Guilty he did with Jake Gyllenhaal last year and stuff like that. And it's interesting that he's doing this like prestige drama kind of thing. And I'm curious to see like what he'll do with that.
Yeah, just to reiterate, it does suck that the movie will, at least for the foreseeable future, just be totally bogged down by that slap incident. And it sucks that we even have to talk about it again, because by talking about it, we're resurrecting it. We're resurrecting the discourse. But
I'm part
of
the problem.
I know. We're being part of the problem, but it's sadly, it's relevant to the film, especially since there's no reviews out yet. There's not a lot of press, as you were saying.
Yeah, nobody's seen it yet, but, you know, the reviews will come in, like you said, limited theaters this week and then Apple TV Plus next week. So we can definitely spotlight some reviews coming up once people are able to check it out. Let's head into taking kind of a quick look back at some stuff that you and I have been watching. We'll check out some of last week's releases. Let's just dive into last weekend. Let's do a little look at what's going on with Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery directed by Rian Johnson. All the talk on Twitter is the theatrical one we've released with Netflix. And then, you know, now it's not available anywhere and it'll be on Netflix around Christmas time. Everybody talking about whether that's the right call for Netflix, for theaters, et cetera, et cetera. But it's from people who have seen it in that theatrical release. It's doing pretty well, 4.1 average on Letterboxd. And I'll say, I was looking through the reviews, tech weekend watch list. Thank you, everybody who does that, to see what people were saying about it. I have not seen Glass Onion yet. I was feeling so much anxiety looking through these reviews, terrified of any spoilers out there.
Was the Letterboxd community kind, and did they mark anything that was a spoiler correctly?
They did. From what I was seeing, they did. I was seeing a lot of spoiler flag, like reviews marked spoiler. So I didn't look at those. I looked at just the ones that were not. And I have not been spoiled on anything, which is I appreciate that deeply.
Thank you, Letterboxd community. Marco says, Benoit Blanc.
I was hoping you would read that one. Yeah.
Benoit Blanc is becoming the Paddington of mysteries. And Rian Johnson, it's Paul King.
For Letterboxd specifically, very big praise.
Mitchell, you have been receiving a bunch of screeners, haven't you?
Yes, thank you.
Can you catch us up?
Nice teeing that up. I've been getting, finally, as we know, like I don't go to the movie theater, so I haven't been getting to see a lot of the stuff that you and Slim have been checking out, you know, over the past couple months. But I'm in a critics group, not to brag, and I've finally been getting some of those screeners that come in like over the holiday season for like awards voting time. And I've been catching up on a bunch of the stuff that's been coming out. Haven't gotten Glass Onion yet. What's up, Netflix? I did get White Noise last night, so I'll check that out soon. But the big moment for me, I did finally get to see my boy, Lyle, comma, Crocodile. Lyle, comma, Lyle, comma, crocodile. But yeah, I, after a year of feverish anticipation, I saw the Lyle, and I'm gonna be honest, Mia, I love that boy.
Yes.
4 out of 5 for me.
Ooh.
I really had a great time with it. People have been out there like, oh, is this a bit? Is Mitchell joking about wanting to see Lyle? Blah, 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 blah. No, I was very much looking forward to it. You got Scoot McNairy in there. You got Constance Wu in there. I was excited for it. And it's even better than I was expecting it to be. I think Lyle is not getting the credit he deserves on Letterboxd. We got to get that rating up. I found it a very heartwarming movie about finding your voice, about not pressuring other people to be anything other than what they want to be, and about that kind of that validation that you feel with community and people who just accept you for who you are, and how that can let you let your full self sing and flourish and just be out in the world. I really loved My Sweet Lyle.
I like it like that. I like it like that.
That is how we are introduced to Lyle, by the way.
It is, yes. A baby Lyle, which, yeah, I was watching it with my partner, Sam. And when I was hearing this small little voice, I literally look over at Sam and I go, I think that's Lyle. I think that's baby Lyle. Like, and it was.
It was. Who else could sing
it
like
sure
that?
Is.
Oh, man. I'm so glad you finally got to see Lyle. I'm very, very happy for you. It is a cute movie about anxiety.
It really is. It really is.
I feel like
it really is.
I was an anxious kid. I'm an anxious adult. If I had seen this as a little scared kid, I do think it would have validated me. It's a sweet film.
That's the thing, man. I really related to it, even as a 32-year-old yeah adult. But yeah, especially as a kid. I think more kids should check it out. I hope now
yes
that it's out on like VOD and stuff, more kids
yes
check it out.
All the kids listening.
Yeah, all the kids listening till we yeah go watch this. Go check it out. But you finally got to catch up with a very big blind spot for you that I think is about, you know, I think most people would agree is the same level or so of quality of film and the film culture, the history, probably going to be around the same level on the new Sight and Sound list that's going to drop the same day as this episode. What did you finally catch up with?
I caught up with All the President's Men. I saw this movie for the first time ever. I don't know how the hell I got through journalism and film school and most of the X-Files without seeing it. I just don't know what happened, but I freaking loved it. I gave it 5 stars and a heart. That is not something I often do on a first viewing. But yeah, there's like this 6-minute single take that I didn't even notice was a single take because it's acted and directed so damn well. It's when Robert Redford's on the phone with multiple sources and he's like switching back and forth. It was so incredible. And I also love when he and Dustin Hoffman just go to McDonald's. They go to McDonald's several mm-hmm times in the movie and just kind of hang out there and eat their quarter pounders. Dustin Hoffman at one point is just, he's munching on a plain burger patty with no bun. It's incredible. And then Robert Redford has like 6 different cups around him for some reason. Like mm-hmm it's like they've been there forever. It's just the production design is, I've never seen anything like it. It is a very well-deserved production design Oscar. And I think it deserved many more. I prefer this to Network.
Oh, wow.
Which was the other big journalism movie that year.
Yeah, I really dig it too. It's such a great movie. And I think that it's one of those ones that you love on a first viewing and then it only gets better on like rewatches too. I had seen it, the first time I saw it, I was like a teenager. And then I watched it again when I got my like updated COVID booster shot last month and was like really sick for a day or whatever. I just watched it laid up in bed and it was weird. It's weirdly, even though it is about, you know, cracking Watergate and everything, it's like this very like heavy time in American history and a kind of bleak time about not trusting the people who are supposed to be looking out for us kind of stuff. It's also very soothing just watching these guys going through the process of, you know, breaking the story. And yeah, those moments that you talk, the McDonald's conversations, I love that you called that out because that's just, watching them just be in the McDonald's and like going back and forth with each other and like having that weird mixture of like, they clearly, these guys don't like each other, but they like kind of like they need each other. They kind of maybe respect each other, maybe not at the beginning, but sort of grow to. It's a very weird dynamic between the two of them that I really enjoyed watching.
Well, we have no updates from Jack, this week, unfortunately. Tragic. So we're just going to go right into our watch list shuffles.
These are not the Lyle crocodiles of the watch list shuffle world. So my movie that I got on the last shuffle was Clear Cut, folk horror movie. It's on Severin Films, All the Haunts Be Ours folk horror box set, which came out recently. And yeah, I mean, it is a wrenching watch of a movie. Graham Greene plays an indigenous activist who kidnaps a liberal lawyer who kind of failed to protect the community's land from a logging mill manager. And then, you know, he also kidnaps the manager as well. And he basically, like, just ports them through. It almost brings to mind, like, a Saw kind of thing, but not as, yeah, bringing up Saw around me. It's not as, like, torture porn-y as, like, the Saw movies, but it is, like, there are some grueling stuff to watch. He just, like, puts them through this sort of trial of making them both kind of pay for their complicity in destroying this land. And it's really interesting. It's a tough watch. There's some brutal scenes. I don't know if I want to give anything away for what happens, but it's hard to watch. I really loved it. It's very effective. And I think that it does a great job of capturing the kind of duality of being a crappy white person who is complicit in, you know, what happens to other communities in this country, and especially what we've done to the indigenous people who, you know, founded this country and were here long before us and everything. I wanted to just quickly highlight, like, Ryan Silverstein's review on Letterboxd said, if you can give up the fight and return to your office at any time, you don't know what it's like to fight for survival. And I felt like that was a really good point that was made. But you checked out maybe even bleaker of a movie than Clear Cut. When you got this last week, I definitely had a moment of, oh, Mia's in for it.
Oh, man, I was really in for it. So, honestly, everyone, I watched this at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is a film about brutal murder. It is about a man breaking into a home to kill a woman and her children. So that is a wild way to start your day. I totally see why so many reviews are like, rave, 4+ stars, no heart. They say they're never going to watch it again. I totally understand that. Like, I can't imagine watching this again, but honestly, I probably will, because again, watching it at 7 in the morning is maybe not the most ideal, not the most ideal time for this one. It's also based on a true story.
That's true. Yeah, I forget about that. Yeah.
It's nice to forget about that, isn't it?
Forgot about it. Yeah, angst is it's a tough one to see. Sam and I watched it a while back and did the opposite of what you did. We watched it at like 11 o'clock at night and then tried to go to bed after, which was like just as weird and bad of a vibe as watching it first thing in the morning. So let's check out what some people are logging, tagging their reviews as we can watch the shuffling along with us. I did catch in looking through the weekend watch list tag that Lunch Money logged angst as well. Maybe watched it based on you getting it on your shuffle. Lunch Money said that the film is a perfect example of filmmakers being aware of their constraints and working within them. Style and content are in step with each other.
Yes, there was also a scene that really reminded me of the Possession subway dance scene. It's not as fun as that one. You know, she's dancing around with the milk and everything.
Oh, God. But yeah, the one in angst is just nasty, nasty.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have some more reviews from some nicer films, such as this one from Jessica on When Harry Met Sally. I will never forgive this movie for very briefly causing me to be attracted to Billy Crystal.
I wanted to shout out our own Gemma Gracewood, our beloved editor-in-chief, got to go to a screening of Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. The film is not coming out for, you know, a few weeks, I think the end of December. So we'll hear more about it in a future episode of Weekend Watchlist. But Gemma did log her review. She tagged it Weekend Watchlist. Gemma's review said, so jealous of the guy who got his face stepped on by Puss. But seriously, this cat sequel to a spinoff of the Shrek films did not need to go this hard into painterly craft, luminary spectacle, and mythological construction with flamenco soundtrack excellence.
Wow.
We put the thumb in the pie, and it was delicious. May Puss in Boots, The Last Wish be a new Paddington? Gemma mentioning the painterly craft made me think of kind of the unexpected excellence of Paddington's production design. So
her review really made me slam the watch list button. I love how much she loves Puss. I have a platonic love for Puss in Boots. I feel like he is my close personal friend. But as somebody who is married to the rat from Flushed Away.
And Merlin from Finding Nemo, right? That's
a big yes, one for you. Yes, yes. Oh, yes. He has a beautiful voice. So I have a couple of cartoon animal husbands in a totally normal way, though. Don't worry.
Totally normal. Yeah. We all do.
Yeah.
It.
So I really relate to Gemma wanting to be stepped on by Puss in Boots.
Well, let's hit our final moment of the podcast. Let's dive back into our own watch list. Let's shuffle them to see what we're going to get, what we have to watch before we come on the podcast again. For people who want to play along with us, head into your own watch list, sort by shuffle, filter by service, stream only, or I mean, filter whatever you want to filter by. That's what we do so that people can watch along with us if they so choose. And then see what you get. What are you looking at, Mia, for what you gotta watch next time?
Let me filter by services. Oh man, I got another bleak one, Mitchell.
Oh no.
So but this is one I actually added to my watch list after listening to the James Gray episode of Four Faves. He talks about Killer of Sheep, 1978, directed by Charles Burnett. This is, I'm looking at the synopsis. It's about working in drudgery at a slaughterhouse. So I'm in for another bleak week, but I am really looking forward to this one. James Gray was really raving about it, and I trust him. So
it's definitely the slaughterhouse thing being in the synopsis, I think, is a little bit misleading. That's not like a big part of the movie. It really is like, it's a very like neo-realist kind of just like, what life is like. It is bleak, but very, very effective, a very significant movie. I really love it. But yeah, it's not as nauseating to watch as Angst.
Phew, okay.
Or something like that.
I get scared when it has killer in the title. It's talking about a slaughterhouse. Sure. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And what did you get, Mitchell?
I have gotten a movie called Alphabet City from 1984, directed by Amos Poe. The synopsis of it is a New York City drug dealer decides to get out of the business but has to flee from mobsters. I am very excited to watch this. The reason that it's on my watch list is because the Blu-ray label Fun City Editions put this out a while back, and they release like some of the coolest stuff out there. They just released Cutter's Way. They released on Blu-ray, which is like one of my favorite movies of all time. Katie Reif highlighted that in our latest Shelf Life column. And yeah, I mean, they're just Fun City Editions. They're like a New York-based boutique Blu-ray label. They've been killing it. I'm very excited to check this out. The images I've seen of it are exactly my kind of like 80s, like neon at night vibes. So very stoked to check it out. I, of course, have it on Blu-ray from Fun City Editions. Very excited to watch it.
I love the poster. I just looked this up on Letterboxd, and the poster is
rad.
This handsome guy in a leather jacket that has like a glitter sparkle on it, like just like one sparkle. He's sparkling, leaning against a car. I'm excited for you.
I'm heading to Alphabet City.
Yeah, go to Alphabet City. Report back.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia Mitchell, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. If you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show. You know, everybody's Spotify raps are out there right now. Letterboxd Show getting a lot of love. Our listenership is way up this year. So thanks everybody for listening.
And thanks to our crew. And thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watch List is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.